I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah.
And welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. And I'm Wesley Sykes. And through the other side of the ether is the behemoth to my war pig. It's Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, human-animal hybrid henchman for hire.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that wasn't Bebop and Rocksteady?
It could have been, yeah. If you didn't look close enough, you might have missed it. There was also a couple times, too, where Lila and Tooth and Floor, you know, they could have all been toys in Sid's playground, you know, in Sid's backyard in Toy Story, right?
That's a great call. That is a great call. Now, I know we're going to dig into this more later, but this is something I don't think we'll get touched on. Floor, when you first saw Floor, did you realize that it was a rabbit?
So like through that clip that we shared in last week's episode, or maybe it was the week prior, that was part of that extended clip. Okay. I knew it was a rabbit, a walrus, and an otter, right? For Lila. But I didn't know that they were all like mechanical and kind of like robotic science experiments. I thought they were more like rocket, like whole animals, but with smart brains.
Gotcha.
So when they came out with the spider legs or, you know, the Blade Runner arms, that sort of thing, like, that caught me by surprise.
I'll tell you what, when I saw Floor, I was like, I thought it was a gigantic spider. Like actually, like it was a mechanicalized spider. I was like, what the hell is this thing with like the fur? It's like, is it a tarantula or something like that? It freaked me out. It took me a second to like it wasn't until the second flashback that I was like, that's a freaking rabbit. Holy shit, that's terrifying.
It was definitely unsettling. Definitely unpleasing to the eye here. And if you haven't already guessed, we'll be discussing the 40th installment, Nick, of the MCU storyline, as well as the finale of James Gunn's Space Odyssey, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, starring Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Karen Gillan, Dave Bautista, and so much more. But before all that, Nick, what's your go-to item to bring to a barbecue or outdoor party? I don't know if this was the case in your neck of the woods, but glorious weekend down on Cape Cod here. We got temperatures in the 70s, nice sun, sunshine. So looks like we're turning the corner to summer. Is that the case for you?
You know what? I was down in Connecticut for family related stuff. So I would have loved to have enjoyed a nice relaxing weekend with nice weather. But I had a nice weekend. Just that, you know, wasn't able to do that exactly.
Attending to wedding affairs?
Church related stuff. First communion for one of my nephews. So,
very nice.
He did
Mazel tov.
He did a reading and did an outstanding job. I was a very proud uncle. But anyway, it's the first time I think I've ever said that. Anyways, when it comes to what I bring to a barbecue, I mean, I think the easiest thing is either your alcohol in some capacity, which generally is going to be beers for that, or like chips and salsa, something to that effect, or other kinds of chips that maybe don't have a dip necessarily. Maybe they do. But yeah, I mean, probably beer. And I would probably bring IPAs because that's what I generally like to drink. But at the same time, it's like, What kind of barbecue are we talking here? Is it like a lot of people? Is it just a few friends? That kind of will alter which beers I'm probably bringing.
So I love the beer route, but for the opposite reasons, because I don't want to be drinking IPAs outdoors and in the heat. I don't like IPAs to begin with, but especially on a hot summer day, that's not my jam. Give me something very drinkable, your Bud Lights, your Coors Lights, your Rolling Rocks, your High Lifes, all that good stuff is in place. So I want to make sure I'm bringing that. And if that's the case, then I think it's like a 30 rack is definitely doable. And then the host just takes over whatever. But I think in your case, if you wanted to go IPA, where that's a little bit more of a like a specialty item, maybe not everybody wants that, right? So maybe a 12 or maybe a sixer, a little variety pack or something like that. Then I think you'd be good if you're going a little bit personal there.
As we're going through this now too, actually the better route for me would probably be go like High Noons or, one of the other kinds of seltzers. High Noons seem to be the ones that we're in on these days. So that would probably
be right. Have you gotten into the tequila flavor at all? That's all over the commercials.
I didn't get to try it, but Lauren picks them up. She was not a huge fan, but she did finish it off. I feel like I tried it and it wasn't as good as the regular ones. Have you tried them?
No, I've had the vodka ones, and I've been slow to the seltzer train. You know, I've had a long drink a few times going out to play golf with Doc. You know, those have been tasty. Although I'm not a big gin fan, you know, I'll have the Trulies and whatnots and stuff.
Is that what Truly is?
Truly's not as well. That's a vodka drink. But the other popular seltzer brands, you know, I've tried some of those. Mm. They're good. Maybe it's my toxic masculinity. I just still can't make the step of actually purchasing them for myself. If they're around and I don't have beer, I'll have them. But that's kind of it.
Gotcha. Okay. But I think for bringing those to a party like that.
That's a good call. Yeah, because that's men and women.
Mm-hmm. Yep, covering everybody. Absolutely. Yeah.
But maybe a food item, though, if I'm not bringing that beer, I think the food item might be I've been doing really good teriyaki chicken strips, chicken skewers, steak skewers more specifically. So I think that's nice. You get a nice marinade. You bring a nice Pyrex dish. You give them to the host. Let them throw it on the grill because people are weird about, you know, you never want to cook on another man's grill. You let them do it. So, you put them on there. I think that's a good fan favorite there. Everyone needs some more beef in their life.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I didn't know you're adding more and more to your cooking resume, menu?
Yeah, well, you know, I can cook a little bit. I like to shoot from the hip, like most things I can do, you know? It's
true.
I'm just going off vibes.
Okay.
let's shift over to what's trending now. What do you say, Nick?
Sounds good.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
I found this on YouTube, Nick. Dune Part 2. The trailer, the first one, has been released last week, I believe, as a crow flies. But we were just watching it just a few moments ago. What'd you think?
Dude, this looks awesome.
Yeah.
This looks really, really good. I mean, look, the first one we enjoyed. I forget what we gave for grading on that, but I do
it had to be mid to high 80s if I'm thinking for myself.
Yeah, and
it's long, but it was good.
Yeah, I can't imagine I was far off. I feel like we were in the same neighborhood now, but it was really good, and it was long. It was a little bit more. There's a lot of like setting this stage, not quite as much action, but it was all very interesting. This looks like it's going to be a ton of action, but also some really major developments in the plot too. So I'm very excited for this coming off of this trailer. What about you?
Yeah, we're seeing our boy little Timmy Schatz there riding a sand slug. So that looks cool. You know, corralling one of those sand tremors. So yeah, I'm here for it. You know, we get some sort of like Prometheus looking guy that he's fighting with, and it seems to go to like all black and white for a certain screen there. It kind of reminds me of Gore the God Butcher in Thor and his kind of like realm where it was just kind of like an absence of light, and then everything else kind of going. So that seems kind of interesting, but again, without having too much prior knowledge of the IP and the book lore and everything like that. So I'm just, this is going to be one of those movies where I just let kind of wash over me and just kind of accept, you know, more so than, you know, what we're going to be reviewing today in Guardians and the MCU and that type of stuff.
Right. And also too, I want to note, like as I'm watching this, we knew already that there was a lot of like impressive actors involved in Dune, but but now we're also adding Florence Pugh to the mix.
So right.
It's crazy. This roster. And I'm watching, what is her name? Zendaya with Chalamet. And I'm like, I know this isn't her actual boyfriend. I was like, man, she's got a type, doesn't she?
Oh yeah, well, you know, maybe that's all it takes, though. You know, we just saw with what's his name, Glenn Powell, the guy from Top Gun, and who's the hot blonde, why can't I think of, she's in Sydney Sweeney. They just did some sort of romantic comedy where they're all over each other, and then in the promotion of it they've been like super flirty. All these videos have come out, they're all very handsy. And I'm pretty sure Glenn Powell's girlfriend broke up with him.
Wow.
You know,
interesting.
Like, how would you feel? Well, this would be a little bit different, but how would you feel if another man referred to, you know, your fiance as Top Gun?
Ooh, yeah, no.
Shoes on the other foot, but that's kind of the situation from what I was reading, is that Sydney Sweeney referred to Glenn Powell as, you know, his top or her Top Gun. And then the girlfriend caught wind of that. I was like, what? We can't be having this.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine being on either side of it and being okay, quite honestly. Like there's like four different sides of that. I wouldn't want to be on any of
Yeah,
them.
right. Absolutely not. No way. But my point is, and the connection is that maybe they do, like, some people think that was just a PR stunt to kind of drum up publicity for the movie, kind of show like it's a romantic comedy, like there's supposed to be a love interest, so maybe actually show that on-screen romance off-screen and interviews and that sort of thing. So maybe they could do that with Chalamet and Zendaya there.
That would be, I don't know how Tom Holland feels
about it. I don't know. Who knows? I'm just throwing spaghetti against a wall here.
See if it sticks.
Yeah, see if it sticks. See if it sticks.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this from the Hollywood Reporter, Nick. True Detective Season 1 creator Nick Pizzolatto has signed on to write Blade, starring Mahershala Ali. That
That
does all
sounds,
sorts of things for me.
yeah, it sounds great. My only th first, unfortunately, my first thought is like, okay, well, like when is he actually going to be able to write this? Because the writers are all on strike right now.
Great point. And
yeah.
actually, this is a little bit of breaking news as a crow flies. And I heard that Daredevil Born Again has been suspended because of that. So that's really one of the first Marvel projects that we've seen publicly announced that they're going to be on hold.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought I saw something with Blade being on pause because of this
I
too,
mean, that
but
makes sense too.
yeah, it seems like everybody other than the Lord of the Rings show is delaying things because of the writer's strike, which I don't look. I loved the Lord of the Rings show, but I do not feel great. Like see, them, like they got so much shit going on in that show. You are not one of the ones that should be trying to like work through this the
Well,
writer's thing.
this makes sense though. You know why it's that show that's going to be plowing through this writer's strike is because it's owned by Amazon Prime, Jeff Bezos, and they always have to deliver on 2-day shipping. You know, they never miss a deadline. They gotta do it.
Wow, that's
Huh?
well done, sir. Hats off
Not
to you. That
too
was a good one. That
not too bad.
I didn't know where you're
It might
going
be
with
a
it.
joke, it might be true. I don't know.
I think it's a bit of both, and that's why I love it. But regardless, I'm not a fan of that. I'm a fan of Pizzolatto being involved in the Blade project. I mean, obviously, season one of True Detective is one of the best like seasons of show of TV, period. And Blade, just in general, this is a character who I really want them to see him knocking out of the park with it and having Mahershala Ali. Everything around Blade seems like it's great. It's just like we need to see how that all comes together.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm here for it. I love if they adopt some sort of that bayou culty, you know, kind of like witchcrafty type of vibe that they got from season one in True Detective and adopt that into Blade, which I feel like is very kind of lends itself there.
Yes.
I think that's great. And also, you know, it says True Detective season one creator, but you know, I think he also had a big hand on season three as well, which might have lend itself to that relationship with Mahershala Ali and the writer Nick Pizzolatto there. So, you know, I hope this is good news. This whole project has been in development hell since Kevin Feige announced this prematurely like 4 years ago. So, you know, hopefully this gets off the ground and we can actually see this reboot of Blade sometime soon.
Yeah, there's so much potential for the mystic side of the MCU. Obviously, you've gotten stuff with plenty of stuff with Doctor
Yeah.
Strange, but then Scarlet Witch as well. Then you add this to the mix too. I'm very excited for it, and I really hope they. And then I mean, you still have Ghost Rider who you can throw back into the mix as well. So definitely a lot of potential here, and I think you're right on with like the tone that would like fit. I don't know if Pizzolatto will do it, but it makes a lot of sense that you're going through it.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Mystics in the MCU. We got a little Mystic action in Guardians here. One of the Ravagers, I think, had some sort of like the
Yeah.
sling ring action going on.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know what I didn't catch the name of that character, but it seemed like that was like I didn't see the ring, but the powers were the strange powers.
Yeah, I know. I saw the orange sparks. It looked like, you know, steel wool kind of going around there. So, you know, I was like, oh, okay. I think that's the same thing there. I'm gonna do some deductive reasoning here. Let's move on though.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Other superhero news, The Boys. This is often the least talked about superhero franchise of DC, Marvel, and then now The Boys here. But this might be the best show or superhero product out there. So season four is you know, maybe delayed at this point with the ongoing writer's strike, but a little bit of news here with Anthony Starr saying season four includes, quote, the most bizarre thing he's ever done. which I think is big news because of how bizarre every previous season has been. So it looks like they're one-upping themselves once again.
The comic book itself, and I have not read all of The Boys, but the comic book itself is absolutely insane. And there's so much stuff that, like, if you look at the, even there's the first two volumes, there's a lot of stuff they didn't do, they didn't touch. And some stuff I don't think they will in the course of it all, just because of, like, storylines may not make as much sense with the way they've gone throughout the first few seasons. But my God, like, when you talk about, like, pushing boundaries and bizarre shit and everything, that like, in the comic, there's no stopping them in any way. And it only makes sense that we're getting more and more of that here. But this, and I think that they're going to be able to keep continuing doing this. I would think, Wes, what do you think? 6 seasons for this show is what it'll end up being?
Yeah, you know, every time that it stops, I'm like, I don't really care if we get another season. You know, like when we go through this lull period. But then once it comes back, I just can't put it down. It's such a good show. So I think 6 seasons is good. Maybe that's, you know, that seems to be the marker for you know, just an average show that runs out or a good show that goes. And then these great shows, your Seinfelds, your It's Always Sunny's, your Friends, they go on to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and to some success as well. So that's it. That would be an interesting marker there. I think as an odds maker, you picked a perfect number.
I tend to agree. I think
so. I don't appreciate that.
I probably set the over under at 5.5 then, just to be fair. The other thing too, look, I don't want to plant seeds. I don't want to go and like set like wild expectations, but because we've deviated from the comics in different ways, but there's just like, it's endless here. The show and the comics are their own things, essentially, as much as there are a lot of similarities. I would like to see one, like a main character get taken out this season. Like we've seen.
Oh yeah. I mean, we always talk about that. Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm here for it as well. And I think we're getting more Boys content as well. I think there's a prequel or like a school, high school teenage show that's going to be kind of based off that as well. It's coming out soon.
Yeah. Well, we have the animated thing that's out there. I haven't actually watched any of that, but you're right. There is that other show. I don't know when that's happening, but there's the X-Men teams like in The Boys. So there's a whole bunch of other shit they haven't touched on. So it makes sense to do some of that there for sure.
All right. And sticking with The Boys news, but this is a little Boys adjacent. Of course, the star, Carl Urban, he's been rumored, according to My Time to Shine Hello 1 on Twitter, to be cast as Johnny Cage in Mortal Kombat 2. I'm kind of like torn between this news here because I think Carl Urban has the attitude and the charisma and the moxie that you want and kind of that arrogance of Johnny Cage. But, you know, like I'm not sure if he's the traditionally like pretty boy handsome. Like he's like a rugged type of guy, right? At least that's my perception. So I don't know.
That's a fair concern. I think that's a good point. I mean, if that's something that you want with Johnny Cage, which does make sense, I don't know about that with Carl Urban necessarily. And I do think it was confirmed that they were at least in talks with him by one of the Mortal Kombat like bigwigs, like from the video game side of it, I think. I like it a lot just because I think Carl Urban is a great actor. He transforms into his roles so well. I mean, you look at like, I know there's like makeup involved, so it does help, but this guy plays Eomer in Lord of the Rings. He plays Scourge in Thor. And then we see him, of course, take over shit in The Boys. And then he's also in Judge Dredd. And then there's other stuff that I think he was in one of the Bourne movies too, but I don't know how much like that was. He didn't speak as much in that role, but he was still good there. So like, he's a great actor. And he doesn't get as much credit as he necessarily deserves. So I think he can take on the role of Johnny Cage. Well, I think that your concern that you have there is a fair one.
It's just minor. I think I'm more with you. When I first heard that, I was like, oh, that's kind of spot on. I like that. I think that'll be really good. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a spitting image of the character as we've seen in other castings, right?
It's a fair point because then I wonder how are they in their mind thinking, how do we get past this? How do we, like, Carl Urban's obviously an attractive man, but he's not the normal Johnny Cage type. Are they going to go and try and turn him into something different than he's been before? Like, still make him outrageous and everything, like, still stay true to the character, but what if they make him, like, less, I don't know, less Brad Pitt and more Russell Crowe. Like, is that what they try and do?
Oh, okay. It, yeah. All right.
You like that?
Yeah, I like that comparison there. No, I'm with you. I'm with you okay. there. All right.
Because then that would make more sense. It's just a matter of how's it written, I guess, in the end.
Yeah. No, I like it. And overall, I'm here for the Carl Urban casting here. So hopefully, if that's not confirmed already, we'll get some confirmation soon. But I'm confirmed that we're going to be switching gears here.
It's Morphin time!
Ah, a superb choice.
Alrighty, so we got a few big time titles coming out this week. We got from Image Noctera issue 14 and Saga issue 64. From Dark Horse, we have Clear issue 3, which is actually the fifth and sixth issues of the Clear, which was on Comixology originally, of course, written by Scott Snyder, just like Noctera is. From Boom, we got Ghost Lore. In which I did get a chance to read that. That is a Cullen Bunn series we've had on TLDR a few times. And really, we had him on the show a little while back to talk about it. Really interesting start to that series. Very excited about that. And then from Marvel, as you guys, for those who are watching over on our YouTube channel, you can see the cover, the main cover for Daredevil 11. We have that out this week, along with Wolverine 33 and X-Men Red 11. As far as Daredevil goes, there's a lot going on with him and the Punisher, and both of these characters are getting pushed to the absolute friggin' brink right now. Punisher is almost done. Daredevil, Chip Zdarsky, and Marco Cicchetto are almost done writing and drawing, respectively, Daredevil. So if you like the character a lot, there's definitely a lot of stuff going on. Definitely worth checking out. As for TLDR this week, we are doing what's new because we do have other stuff working behind the scenes. I did mention that last week as well, and we ended up having Rodney Barnes on the show with Jason Sean Alexander to talk about Killadelphia. And obviously, Wes, you don't read Killadelphia or comics generally, so I don't mind.
I don't read.
So, well, I didn't want to go that far. Are you talking about? You went through a job. Anyways.
Yeah, well.
But what I wanted to say is that I'm not spoiling this for you, but for anybody who's behind on Killadelphia, I would just not listen for a couple seconds. Maybe fast forward if you're listening on our audio channels. But Spawn gets thrown into the mix in Killadelphia in the 30th issue. It's been out for a couple weeks, so I'm not worried about talking about it. But we got a little bit of behind the scenes of how that came together. Jason Sean Alexander used to draw Spawn, so a little bit about his conversation with Todd McFarlane. So some really cool stuff there, and a lot more. In the latest interview that we had over on TLDR.
Do you think Jason Sean Alexander was suggested to put in his middle name, or do you think he put in his middle name on his own?
It is why he did it. It is because of Jason Alexander. We talk about it to start off the show, because Joe, every time, mentally, like, says Jason Sean Alexander, no, that's the Seinfeld guy, it's Sean Jason Alexander, and then he always says his name wrong on the show. So yeah,
that's good. Yeah, can't stand you. Yeah. I'm sure that's probably haunted him his whole life, so I apologize for that low-hanging fruit there.
No, perfect. It's accurate. This is why he did it. It proves I'm right.
Yeah, that's true. Switching gears here. Over to the main topic for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Nick, why don't you hit us with a synopsis real quick?
Yes, because Wes did not put out a poll last week. And I have no motivation to put out a poll, because as long as I'm winning or not losing, it doesn't matter.
That's true. That's a good point. Good on you.
So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, still reeling from the loss of Gamora, Peter Quill rallies his team to defend the universe in one of their own, a mission that could mean the end of the Guardians if not successful.
Written, directed by James Gunn, which, actually, this is a quick side note. Do you know the actor who played Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs? His name is James Gum.
No, really?
Yeah, yeah. I think it might be two M's too, which is weird, but very weird. But nevertheless, this movie was written and directed by James Gunn, starring Chris Pratt as Peter Quill, Star-Lord, Vin Diesel, the voice of Groot, Bradley Cooper as the voice of Rocket, Zoe Saldana as Gamora, Dave Bautista as Drax, Karen Gillan as Nebula, Pom Clemente as Mantis, Chukwudi Iwuji Now, that's a fun name to say. As the High Evolutionary, the new villain in the movie. Maria Bakalova as Cosmo the Space Dog. Very good dog there. Sean Gunn as Kraglin. And Will Poulter as Adam Warlock. And special shout out to Linda Cardellini as Lila, doing the voice work there.
That was Linda Cardellini? No way. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, poor Lila. We'll get into that more later. But for the box office and critics reception, this hauled in $282 million worldwide to open things up, including $114 million domestic, 8.4 out of 10 on IMDb, 81-95 split on Rotten Tomatoes, 4.4 out of 5 on Google reviews, with 95% of Google users liking this movie. A little surprised by that 81% from the critics, Wes.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by that as well. But again, like you've said previously, now this is kind of open season on critics to kind of express their any displeasure they have with Marvel. So I think that falls in line.
This is true. It's just it seemed like this was, where, look, I know that there are times where I'm just excited to see comic book stuff be so prominent in the landscape and everything. So maybe, where sometimes I tend to be a little few points higher than you, we'll say, when we're doing some of these movies or shows. I account for that with the critics, too. And I'm not even trying to bash them. I'm just kind of confused. Like, this felt like a genuinely good movie. Like, forget about the larger stakes of the MCU and everything like that. It just seemed like a well-done movie that critics would be like, no, like an 85 would be the lowest, I would think.
Yeah, and I've seen, I like to listen to both good and bad reviews on YouTube and stuff just to kind of get a feel of where everyone's at on it and try to kind of get the temperature of everything. So I can understand some of the lower scores, and we can get into that a little bit later. But let's get into our scores, our high scores for Guardians 3. So I gave it a 91 out of 100 here. So this is about as satisfying of an ending to the best trilogy in the MCU that you could get. Guardians Volume 3 is jam-packed with heart and action, with some good laughs peppered in that feel, sometimes forced, but, definitely some good laughs in there. This is the best villain of the trilogy, almost by default. And then you have strong performances from Karen Gillan, Rocket, and Chris Pratt there for me.
On the with some good laughs peppered in. So I was in a I was actually in a pretty packed theater, which I think – since I moved up to New Hampshire, this is the most packed I've seen a theater. Black Panther was pretty packed too. Mm-hmm. Never mind. I mean, from Marvel movies, because Super Mario was the one where the theater was like off the chain. It was crazy. Yeah. But dude, I was sitting next to this guy who laughed like at so much stuff that was not supposed to be funny. Like I laughed. There were times I laughed out loud. Like Lauren didn't laugh as much as I did and whatever. But we're watching stuff with like Rocket's flashbacks and like none of that was supposed to be funny. Like he chuckled and I'm like, I looked at Lauren a couple of times. I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
This guy's a psycho. I didn't have anyone I realize laughing at those kind of sad parts, but there was this guy on the far end of the corner of the theater that I could hear, a clapper throughout, a wooer throughout, that sort of thing. But people are excited. It's fandom. People are back in theaters. I'm not going to hate on it.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. You're next to a creep. I would be a little concerned there. That sounds fair.
Very odd. But I gave this a 93 out of 100. So Wes and I are practically roommates on this. We're living in the same building. I think is the best way to put it. I don't know. Have we ever had the same score on anything? I feel like there's got to be a couple times it's happened, right?
Maybe. Captain America Civil War, 93-93 split.
Okay.
So on Civil War of all things, we were undivided on that.
That's perfect. Like Civil War, I also gave this a 93 out of 100. This movie, what an emotional ride. I never felt comfortable throughout the entire viewing process. Mm-hmm. Over time, I could see this becoming my favorite Guardians movie.
I could see that as well, and maybe we can just touch on some of the things that I think that I heard that some people didn't like. I think first was the length, 2.5 hours. I think people can feel some type of way about that. I was fine with it. I thought the story was intriguing enough and kind of kept me engaged enough where I wasn't looking at my clock, my watch, or anything. But also with that, where you have so many plans to land, plans to unfold that you don't, it feels a little bit rushed at times too, while even in that length, maybe you don't get to explore some of the interesting concepts about like the High Evolutionary, about having free will and being under the control of a god or something, you know, that whole thing, predestination. So I think that's really interesting. That was just kind of glossed over that I would have liked. Although I found the Rocket backstory really effective and how they did it in flashbacks while he's unconscious or in a coma. You know, maybe you could have gotten more time with it by doing it a different way. I don't know, but I think everything works. But I think those were some of the flaws with
you know,
that when people had in the movie.
When you talk about the certain things being rushed, I think that I can see that. Like I didn't feel that way in the viewing process, but now, like, as we're talking about it, I can see that to some extent, because when you look at kind of, first of all, like you said, there's so many planes that you're trying to land or submarines that you're trying to bring into port. I'm not sure where you're going. But I like with Rocket, obviously they did a lot. I actually felt like pretty satisfied when it came to the High Evolutionary, but I think when we get into how things transpired towards the end, maybe with Mantis more so. That's, you know, there's a whole bit there. But I think the ones that stand out the most are probably Drax and Star-Lord. But we can get into those a little
bit more. For sure. Yeah. So with that 93 and 91 grade overall, that puts us at a solid, rock solid 92, which puts it in ninth, a top 10 movie in the CMMCU rankings.
Yep.
So at a 92, that's just behind Spider-Man No Way Home, which got a 92.5. And just above the Avengers and WandaVision at 91.5. And then if you want to look at the rankings for within the trilogy, it goes Guardians number one, which comes in sixth overall with a 93. Then Guardians Volume 3 with a 92 at 9. See if you're keeping track at home. And then scrolling down a little bit, Guardians Volume 2 coming in at 3. Really 26th overall in the MCU rankings with a combined score of 84.5. That's a lot of numbers.
This, it is a lot of numbers, but it goes one is one, two is three, and three is two.
Yes. Yeah. You got it. Yeah. Now tweet us what you think it is, and we'll tell you. It's like one big shell game. We're just moving the cups around, you know?
Exactly. Wherever it is, you're wrong. But out of 40, there's 40 movies or 40 pieces of content, I guess, right?
That's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, because we got a bunch of different shows in the mix here. But having that at 26th, and if you're just doing movies, it's a little bit higher because there's four shows that we have ahead of it at this stage for Guardians Volume 2. But like you said, that this is unquestionably the best of all the trilogies. Even though Captain America also has two top 10 rankings, the original one is also lower than Guardians Volume 2.
That's true. That's a good point there. And then, you know, Thor, I'm not sure if you want to count Thor because it's four movies and may have gotten himself out of there. Yeah, I'm partial to Iron Man. You know, that's great. But Guardians has been top notch for me.
Yep.
They landed the plane, although, albeit a lot of them, they did it in a satisfying way. Not the best way, but it was a satisfying ending.
I think too, when you look at the second, like when you watch this one now, there's a specific line that said, and again, for those who are new to the show, we spoilers. Always do spoiler filled podcast. When there's a line from Lila, and I think it's actually when Rocket's like ready to cross over to the other side, she says how like the story's always been about you. And while it may not have felt like that in the first one necessarily, you look at the second movie, and as we talked about in our last episode of our show, where we did a debate on the original versus sequel, there's a lot about Rocket in there, just as much as him and Quill, pretty much.
Well, yeah, and it's him and Quill kind of butting heads the whole time, kind of jockeying for, alpha supremacy within the group. So, yeah, for sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's get into the exit survey questions here. Where does this rank in your post-Endgame rankings? This seems like a pretty stock, generic question to open things up. I think I've seen this question a couple times on the interwebs.
Sure. Yeah, the only thing that it's behind right now for me is Spider-Man No Way Home, because I have Spider-Man No Way Home is, I think, my highest rated Marvel movie that is not Endgame or Infinity War. Mm-hmm. It does have the same grade as Black Panther Wakanda Forever, but I did like this a smidge more. And also, like, Rocket's my favorite character in the MCU, so that's, you know, just unfair bias.
Yeah, this is definitely number two behind Spider-Man No Way Home, and I think I had Loki almost at an even ranking there. Maybe
smidge lower. No, smidge higher for Loki. You had it at 92.
At 92, okay. And I might, looking back, I think I do like Guardians more than Loki. obviously lends it, gives you a lot more of an emotional range, although there's plenty of that in Loki as well. So I would say that that's probably jockeying for position. No Way Home, Guardians 3, Loki, then Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. I think that's that's probably my top four or five.
Yeah, and even then, like with the, with Spider-Man No Way Home, looking at our scores, where those are, that Spider-Man No Way Home is eighth in our rankings. You actually gave that a 91 as well, so it's right there. Like I had Black Panther, Wakanda
Right
Forever.
right along the same way there. Okay, very all right there.
Yeah. Let's see. What do we got next? Oh, what did this movie do better than the previous two movies, Wes?
It definitely tugged on the audience heartstrings. You know, I think you bring up a good point, Nick, where Volume 2 is definitely kind of trying to do that father-son aspect and kind of like the family relationship sort of thing. I think this definitely goes far and away over Volume 1 and Volume 2 there. And maybe the action scenes, I'm trying to think like I think Guardians Volume 1 probably has that for me just kind of based off memory here, but there was a lot of good set action pieces here that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
They're showing everyone off.
Yeah. And we can get that into that when we get to the most rewatchable scene, which I know is there shortly, but yeah, just to echo the sentiment when it comes to the Volume 2, like it was after rewatching it for our debate, I grew to appreciate the Star-Lord stuff a little bit more because of what goes on with him and Ego. I think Ego's just so like out there and gregarious and everything like that. You kind of lose like how toxic of a parent he is, but in reality, when you focus on the facts, it's like, holy shit, this guy's like the biggest piece of shit in all of Marvel. And then you look at the development of Rocket and Yondu, and again, as someone who loves Rocket, I appreciate all of that even more. But here, everything they did, like with the flashbacks and everything, the development of Rocket, it was, I mean, obviously this is a Rocket movie, but I'm blown away at how you have him in like the present. He's not even involved in half of the movie. Most of his stuff is flashbacks, and I'm still blown away at how I absolutely loved every second of Rocket-related stuff.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. With that said, what was the most rewatchable scene for you?
So I think you put it as the corridor fight, but the hall.
Yeah, the hallway scene. Yeah, another classic MCU hallway scene.
That was outstanding. And actually, when we were talking about it afterwards, Lauren pointed out like how like when Nebula gets like her neck broken and it just like lops off.
Yes,
she just keeps going. That was crazy. But there was a ton of awesome stuff in there. But the big one for me that like stood out as like, this is a weird one to say your rewatchable scene, but like when we talk about action, right, all the time, we want to see cool shit. Don't get me wrong. That hallway scene is cool shit. But when Rocket lays into the High Evolutionary.
Oh, yeah.
Tears his face apart. And we don't even see his face. Like what happened to it?
No, and it didn't feel like it was that bad at the time. And then when you get the reveal that, you know, the High Evolutionary's face is really his mask and it was because of Rocket. It was like, oh man, he really did all that.
I didn't think it was necessarily that bad, but I thought it was like absolutely, he was doing it for a while. Like it was very much like when you talk about like just a passionate act like of violence, I guess. Like that's what this, like we don't get that all the time in the MCU.
You get it in A Christmas Story when Ralphie did it to the big bully.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to cry, girl? Cry, girl, cry.
Is that
the same thing?
is that, I wonder if that was James Gunn's pitch for like Rocket, like going off, like baby Rocket.
Exactly.
Like it's good. Just think Ralphie in A Christmas Story, but a raccoon.
Yeah.
Like it was obviously like the emotions of the kids. Now you make me think of the freaking Christmas story of his friends getting taken out was terrible. And like I welled up. I don't know if Lauren cried, but like I felt that. But when Rocket loses his shit, I was like, yeah, like that was, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it again. That was like, again, like it's weird, but like Rocket has some of my absolute favorite moments in the MCU and they're kind of odd ones, but it's something about the character, man, and how damaged he is and how he always plows through it. Like seeing him unleash on High Evolutionary like that was satisfying.
And we get almost like the inverse prison break scene from Volume 1 and Volume 3 here, kind of going into the Orgo Corp headquarters there to retrieve the brain IP, right? Or the plans to kind of save Rocket and remove that kill switch there. So I thought that was great. You get... again, another whole team aspect of it, but you also get Nathan Fillion's character, Master Kraja, I think his name is, or Karja, something like that, using a pretty badass gun that seems to be effective on everyone. I think it's Nebula and then also Drax, where this probably could have been the place for him to go if he was going to send someone out.
I mean, yeah, I question the effectiveness of that gun if it didn't take him out, because he got a straight shot to the chest and then another big blow to the back. It's like, okay, like, is this not?
Yeah.
What are we waiting for? What's going on?
He's not wearing a shirt. He doesn't have any body armor on.
Yeah, that very much threw me.
But I thought that was all kind of, again, just kind of classic Guardian stuff. The team kind of working together. Everything's kind of chaotic. Plans aren't exactly going to schedule, but they still managed to get it done anyway. So I love all that stuff, even if it was a little bit longer in how it played out.
You bring that up to that scene. I'd forgotten about this, but like where Mantis, like her ending was weird. This was also a great Mantis movie, like for the general portion of it. Like she, like what she yes. did with the those monsters was crazy. But that fight scene where she's like jumping from person to person and like you want to dance,
yes,
yeah, like violent rage, like all that stuff's like holy crap! Like if you can move around and do what she does, you're an effective fighter.
I was just going to say, what an effective way to show off someone's powers who to this point was really bullshit. You know, you're just like, what are they bringing to this other than like the comic relief to it? Right. So
yeah,
I thought that was really, really cool way to see it unfold in a fight. Good job on you, Nick. also, but perfect. I think this really sets the tone for the movie here. This might be my nominee is the Adam Warlock versus the Guardian scene. When we first get introduced to Adam Warlock, right off the bat, it's in nowhere. Before like they really have any time to get them, it's an ambush, right? So it's coming right in. He's coming right into Rocket's window, and you just see how badass he is. I mean, he's kicking everybody's ass, and I don't really know what his deal is, so to speak. You know, he was. Mm-hmm. I think people were saying on the internet after the fact that he was like a big baby. You know, he wasn't fully developed yet. So he was still kind of learning through life, but his power set, I don't really know what his deal is as far as that's concerned, but seeing him go 1v Guardians was pretty awesome. And again, I thought that set the tone for how brutal this was going to be. I thought this was some of the more brutal action sequences and fight sequences that we've seen in the MCU. And that goes to right to James Gunn's tone.
Yeah, and you know what? Two things on the Adam Warlock stuff. First, they did say, I think it was technically his mom, the High Priestess, said like you took him out too early. Aisha, yeah. There you go. You took him out of his chamber too early. But the other thing too, when it comes to the larger fight, again talking about Drax and him surviving this movie, he that was another scene where it felt like it would have been too early to take him out that quickly. Mm-hmm. But it did set a tone of like, dang, Drax might take like a serious pounding throughout all of this because he got worked in that fight.
And also Nebula, I think I remember her taking some heat in that fight too against Warlock before she ultimately comes through and just, stabs him through the belly there. Which again, like all these powers of people, you know, and I know it's like you have to have a suspension of disbelief, but like, you know, how that can work to cut right through someone's body, but like a gun doesn't stop Adam Warlock, you know what I mean? Like he just blows right through walls and all this other stuff. But like a sharp blade can cut right through him. So I don't know. It's like the same thing in Volume 2 with the with those animals there that we see come back in Volume 3. Gamora, it's like they have impenetrable skin, but there's already a cut on the impenetrable skin, and Gamora can just use her sword to cut down and open up the belly. You know, it's like, all right, how does that happen? But you just go with it. You just got to go with it.
You know, as you're breaking it down now, though, I was thinking about Nebula's arm too, because I'm like, where did that come from? It was like, there was like an itch that, like, something was itching at my brain. It's like, where's that from? I may be wrong, but remember that big, like, thing, that big, like, knight kind of thing that was at the end of the original Thor movie? That big dude with, like, the mask?
Yeah.
Was that what her arm was like? I'm just like, that's a question to the people, not just for you.
That's interesting. I know at one point she's like, we owe Rocket our lives. We have to save him because he's upgraded me or helped me become like whole again. So like, I think that was one of the upgrades. And I think in one of like the YouTube videos I saw breaking it down, maybe this was new rock stars, Eric Voss, maybe that was him, but saying that like, maybe he, after kind of, tangoing with Iron Man and his nanotechnology there, and they kind of had a little bit in Endgame and Infinity War, a little one-on-one time, maybe he was able to adopt some of that tech in there.
That's
a stretch, but I can see that too, right?
I don't think it's that much a stretch. I think that looked more, that's what it looked more like. That's what it was. That's what it was, not what I said.
So Eric Voss, new rock stars, you know, they know their shit. They're good stuff there. But this is a, again, we talk about action scenes all the time and most rewatchable scenes, but an honorable mention, that opening one shot scene with Creep by Radiohead there, and Rocket's just kind of checking on everybody and slowly moving. Again, I think that's a tone setter for the whole movie there, and opens up really solemnly, really kind of depressing. Of course, that song, you know, it's kind of like a loner's anthem in so many ways. So I think that not only tells you where the state of the Guardians were when we catch up to them, but again, what the tone is going to be for this movie overall.
Not to throw this is a quick question that I kind of just came up with as you brought up that
scene. No quick questions here.
With
all on script.
We know that the first movie has the best soundtrack. I think this is the same order here. I think it goes the first movie, Guardians Volume 3, and then Guardians Volume 2 for soundtracks.
Yeah, I think so too. I love Florence and the Machine at the end. You know, Dog Days Are Over. I think that's great. And everyone's kind of dancing. You get Drax kind of coming full circle there. Only Idiots Dance, and he comes up joining in. I think there's a lot of joy and hope and jubilance in that, right? And that's kind of, again, what it's trying to convey. And maybe James Gunn's overuse of music is too on the nose for some people, but I think it's nice. I think it's effective storytelling. Yep. I love music videos, so I think anything that kind of goes to that is interesting. And then when it blends in and out between just being background music for the actual characters to being the soundtrack for the audience, I think that's kind of cool too.
That's a very good point, because they do that quite a bit. I feel like with Quill more so than anybody. Well, Rocket too, that's a big part of his thing too.
Yeah,
really good stuff.
Were you satisfied by everyone's ending to their stories? We talked about this, you know, quite a few times already, but just not in depth. So, you know, were you good with everyone's ending?
So across the board, if you're asking for a binary answer, I would say yes, because I'm happy with what they did with Rocket. I'm thinking all this, why would Bradley Cooper want out of this deal? I mean, he's got a great gig like this.
Him and Vin Diesel, right?
Yes. Groot, same thing. Groot had Groot kicked ass in this movie. I mean, when he's got all the guns and taking on the High Evolutionaries people,
And he's pulling them out from under the bark of everything, and it's like, that's so cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
And obviously the hat tip.
It's a show off, right? What is it? It's not an ambush. It's a show off. Is that
Face
what
off.
He says? Face off. Yeah.
But it was also a nice hat tip to the original one where he yells, "I am Groot," going back to back with Pete and everything. But great for them. I think for Nebula, it was a great showing. I know you might feel different. I feel like you feel differently than me on this one. Gamora, I do really like what they did a lot with her, because now she's a totally different person. And now I don't know how much we're going to see of her going forward, because Zoe Saldana is trying to do different stuff, but I kind of like her as an asshole a little bit. I don't need another romantic relationship.
No, not what I had written down here was she was put in a tough spot. I think James Gunn was put in a tough spot with Gamora, you know, because he had the Russo brothers kind of finish her story without him there, you know, through Infinity War and Endgame. So now he's like, I got to come back and finish the story without my lead love interest and my co-lead in the movie. How do I kind of rework this? So I think he was kind of making lemonade out of lemons. You know what I mean? So
gotcha.
I don't hate. I think it works. Truth be told, I was never really sold on the relationship between Peter and Gamora anyway. She always felt icy, even in Volume 2 when they were together. I'd have to go back and watch Infinity War and see that, but it always felt like Quill thought so much more of Gamora than the other way around.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, which is why
it didn't make me care as much, you know?
That's why I kind of like this a lot. Like, she's a badass, and she, like, doesn't fuck with anybody else. Like, I know we see her kind of get more family-ish towards the end, but, like, that felt a little more real to me. Like, everybody's like on her about it, like, you know, whether it's Nebula or Star-Lord. But speaking of which, Quill, it's like an odd choice, but I'm actually very interested to see where it goes, and I want to let you go, so I'll just be quick on these. Drax, actually, I'll let you weigh in on that. And Mantis was a little bit odd, but, like, she's also the least character I'm invested in. So it was kind of like, okay, like, she's weird. Like, it's a weird ending. Okay, I'm fine with it.
But she's like, I'm just going to go and find myself. Like, what does that mean? The writers were like, we just need to go and do, like, she's just going to take those Snorlaxes or whatever they're called there, amulets, and then they just go off into space. And it's like, all right, now what?
I do not know what you remember Snorlax being like, but it was not like those fuckers. I'll tell you that right now. But I do think that makes sense. Like, she laid it out, and but at the same time, it was just like random out of nowhere.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But anyways, where do you stand on all this?
No, I'm with you. I thought Star-Lord was a little off going home to a grandfather who was only seen, you know, just in the first few moments of the first movie. Like, obviously, it's his grandfather that would mean more to him, but as an audience, kind of taken in this movie, I'm like, all right, that doesn't really mean anything to me. So I think he should have just stuck around. I think he should have stayed to kind of lead or kill him off if he's not going to come back. But I think Chris Pratt has said that he would come back to Star-Lord, and of course the end credits scene.
Yes.
But that Chris Pratt himself would actually come back without James Gunn to take on the role as well. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think that's fine. That's not great. I thought Rocket was awesome. Although, you know, we talked about this before the show, but you know, the perfect okie doke, you know, he was probably the odds on favorite to die. Everyone, mm-hmm. You know, everyone was saying that, you know, just the way the trailers were set up. So for him not to die and have this kind of leader redemption story, you know, feels a little bit like the okie doke, the subversion of expectations that, but kind of flipped there. Groot was awesome. Mantis, I'm with you, but Drax should have also died at the point that we just said. But again, the alternative of him getting to be a dad is cool and kind of to live that. You know, you're not a destroyer. You were meant to be a dad. Great line delivered by Mantis there. There's a couple of really great lines. You mentioned the tearjerker factor. You know, I'm there by myself just seeing the movie on a quick, you know, 3-hour window that I have to go get out of the house. I'm like, all right, great. I'm sitting next to some couples who are on a date night. And I'm like, don't cry, don't cry. And I was having like single Indian tears come down at that point, you know? So that was really good. But all in all, like, it's not, I wonder what they left on the cutting room floor in the writer's room or what got thrown out as other options. But this all works for me. That's it may not be perfect, but it works.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting point. I do wonder what they left on the cutting room floor. But Drax is the only one where I really look at it and I'm like, why didn't you like?
Because he's not coming back.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he wanted to. Like, maybe he was like, you know, maybe someday I could, but I need to get away from it now. He just made it so public. Who the hell knows? That's got to be the only reason. Because, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess you want to give him a nice ending, but Drax dying would also be a meaningful ending for him.
That's also a good ending too. I don't think there's anything wrong with killing off beloved characters, especially if it's an earned death, for a warrior's death, if you will.
Yes.
Especially for someone like Drax, I think that's perfectly fine.
Yes, but I think in the end, like, I'm gonna look back on this and I'm not gonna be like, oh, they really should have killed Drax. And maybe I will. Yeah. I don't know, but it's not gonna bother me as much as I'm like the other stuff, I guess.
I hear you. What do you think is gonna age the best from this movie? I think we got a lot to choose from.
I like how they changed Gamora, and obviously it's a different person. So she's, I never change. This is just who I am. So if she's in the mix more later on, that would be really fun to have Space Adventures and then run into Gamora. I think the action, I think the emotion of it all, and, you know, to that end too, like Rocket, everything about Rocket, like just the angle that they took and like being, you know, funny in the first one, more goofy, probably I would say in the second one, they went real like serious here as much as they put in some laughs. And I absolutely loved it. Like, I'm very excited to rewatch this movie.
I am too. I already want to rewatch it too. So I was like, it was like moments after leaving the theater. Like, I can't wait for this to come on demand. So I'm with you.
The joke that will probably age best, as much as this wasn't necessarily the best Kraglin movie, but like whatever about Kraglin, Cosmo, like the whole bit with Cosmo was great.
The Cosmo was great. I still think this is going to get all the love from the Marvel nerds, but I still loved it too. It's Chris Pratt saying, get in the fucking car. That's just great. That's good stuff there. Yes. But I love Cosmo was awesome. Nothing bad, not a bad bone in that dog. Very good dog. Other than being Russian, but they kind of softened that up a little bit there. You know?
They did such a, even the card game, right? With Howard the Duck and.
Not
the collector, but that other guy who was like trying to take the.
Movie. What's his name? He's like the collector's bargainer or something like that. Yeah, he's the buyer.
But even at the table, they're like, you know, they did this to me, but you know what they never did? Say I wasn't a good dog.
Yeah.
So pissed. The whole movie.
Oh, it's like, and her telekinetic powers, like, that's cool. That really came into play, came into handy there too. So I'm with you. Cosmo, very good dog there. I think Adam Warlock, quite literally, is going to age better because he was such a young boy. And so once he develops into... a grown man, you know, and grows into his powers and knows what he's doing a little bit, knows what his deal is a little bit more. I think that's going to work out well, especially when we get to Secret Wars. You mentioned his backstory. I've already mentioned this too, but the way I thought it was effective storytelling to weave in his backstory through a coma as flashbacks there. I thought that was cool. So you can still get everything there. Although if you did want more, that might be a negative for you. But I thought that was effective storytelling to be able to cover as many bases as they had to there. I love the look of the High Evolutionaries Orgo Corp headquarters with that organic tissue made spaceship thing. I thought it was very gross, but I thought that was cool. I thought that was really interesting.
Very well done, but it was definitely gross.
What do you think is going to age the worst, Nick?
I mean, we brought up Kraglin, and I know you had him jotted down too. Like, he was just kind of meh.
Yeah.
And I know I said it before, but like how I won't be bothered by Drax surviving it. Every time I do think that every time I see the scene at Orgo Corp where he gets shot twice and looks like really messed up by it, I'm like, you didn't die there? I thought for sure. So that will probably be the one thing I will ask myself about when I watch this.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a suspension of the disbelief there on hold, right? That's there. But I'm with you on Kraglin. I don't see the point, you know. I mean, he's not there. I find him actually like very off-putting to look at. Like, I feel like he's shaped like a potato, and it's just very oddly shaped. Doesn't do it for me. The fin doesn't do his head any favors, you know. It just doesn't work. I just didn't care about his backstory, and like the whole thing could have just been an allegory for him just not being able to get it up. You know, you just needed some.
Viagra. Oh my god, that is what it kind of was. That's actually really funny.
James Gunn writing that in for his brother is like kind of a low blow.
It is, but I will say when he finally got the thing going at the end, when he finally got it up, it was great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Rock hard. Full blood. Full blood there.
Leaning into more.
But really, what ages the worst? This just gets my vote. Peter Quill nearly dying to retrieve his Zune, only to be saved by Adam Warlock. That just seemed like a dumb thing to get Adam Warlock into the Guardians.
That's okay. That's fair. I was like,
you know,
I was,
he had to come back and save and then get into the group there. I was like, that's the only reason, because it makes no sense why he would chase after that thing. One, chase after that thing, but two, do it without his helmet and his boots, which were absent for this whole movie. Another thing I'm not crazy about.
When I was watching, I'm like, they're gonna, like, I have no problem, like, it going in, I had no problem with him dying. Like, it makes sense. Like, in general, again, it's fine if you kill important characters, but I'm in this moment, I'm like, we talk about earned death. I'm like, really? This is how they're gonna take him out? Like, I know how important his music is to him, and it's obviously become a thing with him and Rocket too. But really? So that I was really that like did throw me when I was watching it.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about the High Evolutionary? Because I think he's gonna age the worst. I thought Chuck Woody and Woozy did an awesome performance. I thought the High Evolutionary again was the best villain in this trilogy, almost by default. But I thought he was menacing. And I thought he did the evil, godlike, egotistical, mad scientist thing very well. But never once did I fear him as a fighter or a threat. He's so insulated with this world around him that he's never really faced a challenge. It's why a little raccoon like Rocket, who's been, you know, his slave in a cage for how long, was able to get the best of him and rip his face off, right? So, like, I don't really view him as, like, a threat. Like, he's just someone who was off in his own corner building his world who pissed off the wrong person.
I think the fact that,
you know what I mean?
I understand what you mean, because clearly, I mean, look, I mean, he didn't learn after Rocket got the best of him the first time around. And then I will say he did show off more power, because when there was that mutiny, which was kind of cool, when there was that mutiny with him, like, like the screen went white because of his power.
But you don't really see it. Like, you see that in like a fit of rage, but he's just so controlled. Like, I don't know. Maybe you just don't see him enough.
See,
to really be threatened by him. I don't know. I think that was cool, though.
Do you think he's going to age poorly, like, going forward in the next time we see him? Or do you think, like, on rewatch of this movie, he's going to age poorly?
No. I think moving forward. Like, obviously, I don't know if he's in the fold or not. But how much of a threat could he really be? I don't know.
This is where I disagree.
But then it's just, like, a nameless, faceless army. You know?
This is a guy who, like, is going to learn from his mistakes, though. And I think where he got his ass kicked, the second all the Guardians were together and coming after him, I don't think he's going to let that happen to him again, where he's also surrounding himself with a level of buffoonery too, between the sovereign and
well, I would say the flip side of that is that he's so egotistical that for a long time he wasn't really able to get that breakthrough that he was looking for, because he was so consumed by Rocket besting him in that first science equation, right? And it's like, how could you do that? I created you. How did you get that in your brain?
Nice.
And that consumed him. And that's what ultimately made him underestimate him, almost, because he was so blinded by that jealousy that he couldn't do it. So I wonder, after getting bested by these idiots, that he's like, again, beside himself, can't pull himself together, maybe goes into a desperate despair. But again, that's two sides.
When you say that, though, it's like it makes perfect sense. I think they have two ways that they can take this character. They're in a really I think they're in a really good spot with the character, but you're right, it could easily turn into him rocking back and forth in a corner of a prison, a straitjacket. Or he could learn from his mistakes, break out of a prison, and then seriously fuck some shit up. It could go either. But I could see your way being the way they go too. I don't know.
I love Chuck Wooji. I just butchered his name, but you know what I mean. Chuck Wooji Iwuji. I think I got that right. I thought he brought a lot of charisma to this role. I thought that it was great. It was kind of similar to Kang, where it was controlled, but this one he was kind of like demeaning, like talking down, like Kang kind of talked to you as an equal, or Ant-Man or whoever, as an equal, but he would talk down and almost belittle Rocket, like, oh, you're so smart, but you didn't realize that you were coming to this new Earth.
I know little brain of yours,
and kind of like pats him on the head,
where Kang is how do we put it last time? It was Thanos is like, he believes he is inevitable, and Kang is like, Kang knows he's inevitable. Yeah. I think with this guy, like, he thinks he should, like, he is like, he's like the step down from Thanos when it comes to that. Like, he thinks he should be inevitable. That's what it is.
Right. I like that a lot. That's pretty good. That's a good breakdown for you. I think we can just end it on that.
Yeah. Tell everybody.
And then the last one was just lack of a payoff on the stakes. You know, everyone gets a happy ending. I think someone deserves to die here.
Yeah. Someone should have gone. I agree.
Someone's got to go. Who had the best performance by a side character, Nick?
This isn't even a conversation. As a fellow dog lover, I'm picking Cosmo.
Oh, wow. This is now you're pandering to the crowd here. So Cosmo is great. Now, my problem that I run into this is Nathan Fillion's Master Karja. Who has this great on-running joke throughout his appearance of him being like, yeah, I got one of those idiots too in my group. How do you deal with them? And it's just so funny. I think that's awesome. And actually, James Gunn has been getting a lot of heat. I don't think rightfully so, for putting in like all the same characters from the Suicide Squad: Nathan Fillion, Sylvester Stallone, his wife, for example. I think Johnny Konamos, the big guy, had some unaccredited appearance in there. And then, of course, who the other one is, who am I blanking on? There's a couple other people there that I'm blanking on, but who all appear on it. And they're saying, oh, he's just putting his buddy.
His brother.
Yeah, absolutely. But you're just putting all your buddies in there, all this and that. And I'm like, this is what Adam Sandler has been doing his whole career, and we love him for it. And I think, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking for myself here, Nick, but as I get older, I just want to work with my friends. I find myself reaching out to people that I know on projects and stuff that I need to get done, because one, there's a reliability factor. And two, if I'm going to have to be doing this work, I want to do it with people that I know and that I trust and that I like being around.
What team in the history of what are you talking about? Like real life or like cinema is like, do you like 9 times out of 10, you're seeing people work with people who they're familiar with.
Christopher Nolan does it, with all of Michael Caine and all of the Batman movies. He was used in Inception, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Oppenheimer, Cillian Murphy. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. So, no, I mean, I understand working with new people here and there and bringing different people in the mix, which happens, but why would you not want to work with a strong base?
Yeah. I don't think it's warranted, but that is surfacing on the internet as well. So Nathan Fillion, Cosmo the Space Dog, got to go with Cosmo the Space Dog on that. What do you think about the little girl at the end, Phyla Vell?
She was one of the children, right?
She was one of the children saved from the High Evolutionaries' grips there, and is a new member of the Guardians.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really have strong feelings either way about her.
Well, no, I just mean, like, have you heard of her before? Do you know what her deal is in the comic books or anything like that?
No, I am not familiar with her at all. Space is just in general usually not my thing, as much as I love Rocket.
Because there's a lot of kids coming up now. You got Love, you know, that little girl there from Thor Love and Thunder. You have Eternity, who I think is also there, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I wonder what's going to be happening there.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That is an interesting point. Yeah.
Interesting. Weird stuff. Who lost this movie, Nick?
I mean, there's an obvious choice.
Yeah.
The high evolutionary is the obvious choice. The other one, and obviously,
I like this though.
Yeah. The other one is the Sovereign. So the high evolutionary, obviously an outstanding performance, but just takes a huge L, whether you look at how his face looks at the end or all his plans and how like it all just falls apart. Everybody like, mutiny on him and everything. But with the Sovereign, where they're like introduced to us as this like powerful, like the highest, like, you know, the highest level of evolution.
Perfection.
Honestly. Yes, perfection. It's like, no, they're just like glorified like idiots. Like they just, they're all good looking morons is what they basically are. And that's like, well, I mean, we knew they kind of sucked in the first time they were around, but it wasn't like that.
And again, how quickly they get knocked down, not just a peg or two, but like all the way down the ladder rungs, right? Yes. Because again, like you mentioned at the end, or yeah, in volume two, not only are they portrayed as this perfection group, but they're like high status.
Yes.
They're all draped in gold. You think they're like, you know, people that have been around for years and they have all this knowledge and stuff. And they're not even people. They're just a creation of the high evolutionary. They're just knowing that they don't even have their own free will. Again, that's something that I would think would be really interesting to play with. That I think, you know, WandaVision kind of played with as well. Whether, you know, the people of Westview actually had their own free will, or you know, they're being decided upon by you know, Wanda's spell. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff there that you could deal with, you know, about God complex, religion, all this kind of things that you can kind of play with the high evolutionary and the Sovereign, and creating all of these worlds that we don't really have time to spend with. So I think that's where, you know, the length can be long and short at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely be open to having more of that. But some of the commentary with the character, and like, I felt like when it came to talking about what he wants to do, there wasn't really much fat when it came to the high evolution.
Yeah,
like it was everything. It was like you could honestly, like, they stretched out like every last bit of what could come out of that character in this movie, like with the time that they had.
Oh, look at you! A little bit of a facelift.
Oh wow! Okay.
I'll also give a shout out to Kraglin, because I just, again, I didn't like looking at him.
Yeah.
2.5 hours.
No, man. Yeah, no. It's, yeah, he.
Hop on a treadmill.
The more and more I'm looking
cut
at him.
Cut back on carbs.
He look more and more like Weasel, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's he was Weasel, right? In the Suicide Squad, yeah. That's a little, he's got that big old pop. He's got the skinny fat syndrome, and like, that's a tough place to be.
The outfits were not very flattering.
Would you rather be in the skinny fat zone or the friend zone, Nick?
Oh, friend zone.
Yeah. Because then you could still be jacked and then
exactly
not be in someone else's friend zone, but you're always carrying around the skinny fat. I like it. Good thought there. Who won the movie, Nick?
Rocket fans. I could not be like, this is it, man. This is fucking awesome. Such a good movie, such an emotional movie. And all of it centered around him. I didn't go in, neither of us went in, I don't think, thinking like Rocket's not going to be in like the present story.
Right.
For over half of the movie, and I still absolutely love every single thing. And I can get very like picky about flashback stuff, and whether we're talking about movies or comics or shows, sometimes it can be really cool, really well done, but there are other times like, all right, like I get it, like we've gotten enough flashbacks, like let's fucking stop. I didn't feel that way at all here. I ate up every second of the flashbacks, and it was just like crushing the way it all came to an end. And then Groot had a great movie too, great showing for him.
Yeah, Groot was great, and then you get maybe the King Groot at the end there with the crown. So he's just kind of like hiding like in the desert there, just as a lump of wood. So I think that's cool. Then he comes out and he's yoked. So yeah, absolutely. Fans in general, I think fans, this was a great movie. If you're fans of the Guardians, if you're fans of the MCU, have been feeling that Phase 4 fatigue, you know, maybe this offers a little bit of relief for you there. But really, I think it's James Gunn. This, again, maybe feels obvious.
Yeah, it's true.
But I think this is a great comeback. And, you know, when Adam Warlock gets welcomed into the Guardians and gets helped out by Groot and by Rocket, he says, "I tried to kill you. Why are you helping me?" Maybe it was to Drax. I forget who it was, but it was someone in the Guardians crew. And he said, you know, it's because we all deserve second chances. And I felt that to be very meta. This was James Gunn's second chance at the Guardians after being fired for you know, old tweets or whatever it was, you know, right after Volume 2. And they brought him back on. And this was kind of, I found that to be very meta. And it was like, wow, almost the way that they said it and the way that it kind of stood on its own made it seem like he was also like talking directly to the audience. Like, thank you, we all deserve second chances. So I saw that as kind of a double entendre there. So
that was a great catch by you. I didn't know that's what it was for. Wow.
Not bad, right? That's all from this noggin here too. That wasn't from watching other shit. So
I mean, that's why you're able to shoot from the hip, because there's so much going on in there.
Yeah, too much. Not enough sometimes. Maybe too much.
Which one is it now?
Yeah, okay. It could be.
Moments gone, everybody.
But yeah, that's it. That does it for the exit survey here for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Nick gave it a 93. I gave it a 91. That's good on the Richter scale for a 92 overall. Good for ninth place on the CMMCU rankings. So it's out in theaters. Go watch it now. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. All right, let's switch gears real quick. It's morphin' time. Get your tickets and, hop on the train. Find your seats because the train is leaving the station, ladies and gentlemen. All aboard!
Choo-choo, bitches.
Do you even need to say what's going on this week in the DSG? No, because we're going to the Discharge Depot, right? I just jumped something real quick there. What'd you watch this week?
That's the normal order. We usually do Discharge Depot, then this week in the DSG.
Yeah, I almost just went into explaining everything in the DSG and caught myself midway through.
But so everybody knows, everybody's talking about Guardians or they're protesting on podcasting is pretty much what's going on. For me this week, actually, I watched The Last Kingdom, Seven Kings Must Die on Netflix. I believe this is, I mean, based on everything that transpires in this, I believe it's the punctuation mark on this whole series, which by and large, I've really enjoyed. This felt very much, very similar to the episodes that we got from all the other seasons. I forget if it was like six seasons or something, or five seasons, but it felt like just a slightly longer one, a lot of crazy action. And I was satisfied with how they ended this thing. And it was like a nice like little send off, I think, for everybody who really enjoyed the series. And I was one of them. I absolutely loved this show.
All right. I love it. Well, I was enjoying the nice weather this week. I'd taken the dogs and the baby down to the beach for a little little afternoon swim session for the dogs. You know, the baby got just hung out on the shore there. But yeah, so it's nice getting to enjoy the weather out there and watch George of the Jungle yesterday. So yeah, that was fun with the Brendan Fraser reboot. Thomas Hayden Church, Leslie Mann. It's actually kind of a funny movie.
Reboot?
Well, yeah. So I George of the Jungle was like a story or like a TV show or something way back when. Like, I don't think that was an original movie.
You mean, so they had Tarzan and then they made George of the Jungle and then they made George of the Jungle again? That's,
I'm almost positive. Maybe I'm wrong there. George of the Jungle.
I wasn't more questioning you. It's more just like who would
create it.
You know, they remake everything nowadays, so whatever. But it just felt that it sounds very,
yeah, odd. It ran. Let me see here. It was drawn by a cook on his minesweeper in the Navy during the World War II. It ran for 17 episodes on Saturday mornings from September 9th to December 30th, 1967 on ABC.
Was it a cartoon?
Yeah.
Oh, that. Okay. All right. Still. Okay. All right. Whatever. I've said what I said. I'll leave.
1967. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyways.
But the source material was inspired by Tarzan the Ape Man, the film that predates Disney's animated retelling of Tarzan by 2 years. Oh, interesting.
So there we go.
There we go. Yeah, that's settled.
Thank you. There we go. Now, it saves us from doing a rewatch on that because I wasn't ready for, or an original versus sequel.
We're about to go to war. Yeah.
Original versus reboot, I should say. But yeah,
it's all plays.
Yeah. So what do we got? Because I know it's a month from now we have Spider-Man. Is it into the, no. the next Miles Morales one. I'm forgetting on the name right now.
Across the Spider-Verse.
Across the Spider-Verse. So we have a month till that. Do we have anything like set?
Let's pull up the old calendar here. This could be of good use. Change My Mind podcast. Change My Mind episode ideas.
Yeah, because I know we have like stuff that we can use in the bank, but I don't think we have anything mapped out at this point.
No, nope. We have. Oh, so yeah, we did this a week early. So what we had here for the 15th was Guardians 2 versus Guardians 3 original versus sequel, or Suicide Squad versus Guardians 3. Could be interesting there, but other than that, you know, we got 2 weeks away from the Spider-Verse rewatch. We got that in the bank. 3 weeks away.
Yep. We could do
we could play around with something. Maybe we got something coming up here.
Yeah, we got a free play, as you like to put it usually. Okay, we'll iron that out then.
Yeah, until then though, it'll be the same bat time, same bat place as always.
It's morphin' time.